میخوایم که درس بخونم.
I want to continue my education. I want to work. I want to have my own life.
Afghans coping in a new country. It's Tuesday, September 14th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Go online to find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, the Taliban on women's education, North Korea missile test, pushback against U.S. vaccine mandates, mobile classrooms in India, New York's Broadway set to reopen. It's all on today's VOA Asia. After undergoing the traumatic experience of leaving their home country, thousands of Afghans are relieved to be in the United States. Many are finding, however, that they have been granted temporary status, forbidding them to work or attend school. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti takes a look at how evacuees are coping with the lack of benefits and opportunity in a foreign country.
Bibi Sarah Kamal has gone from sitting aboard a C-17 out of Kabul to standing on her own in the U.S.
I want to continue my education. I want to work. I want to have my own life. For example, I want to have my own car.
But her evacuee status is stopping her. In Afghanistan, Kamal was in her final semester of pre-med to become a dentist. Her journey to the United States resulted in a 2-year temporary status. She's known as a parolee, not a refugee. That means she receives no benefits and is not allowed to work or attend school for 2 years. Thousands of evacuees like Kamal were pushed through the Abbey Gate at the Kabul airport without papers, linked to family members who are U.S. citizens or on a special immigrant visa. They were processed on U.S. soil and accepted as humanitarian parolees with no health care, no money, no food, and no pathway to citizenship.
I volunteered to go down there.
Adam Bates is with the International Refugee Assistance Project. He volunteered at Fort Lee, Virginia to process hundreds of evacuees who arrived without documents.
I think it would be reasonable to assume that if the U.S. government has just taken you 6,000 miles around the world and sent you to America, that you would be allowed to work. But that's not the case.
That worries Andrew Arthur of the Center for Immigration Studies, who spoke to VOA on Skype.
Anybody who's in this country who doesn't have a means of support is probably going to turn to the underground economy or alternatively turn to crime in order to replicate their existence here.
The solution could be federal dollars. The Biden administration is asking Congress for more than $6 billion for the overseas processing, vetting, and resettling of Afghans. An NPR survey shows a majority of Americans support admitting Afghans into the U.S., but of those opposing resettlement, 2 out of 3 said the U.S. cannot afford to support more refugees. Republican legislators like Senator Ron Johnson say the emphasis should be on background checks.
They might be on a terror watch list or something. That's going to be a real problem for us because we've already granted them legal rights here in this country.
Back in Virginia, Kamal is learning about American culture and its electronic advances.
Turning the faucet on is like the electric system of a car that adjusts itself with a touch.
Meantime, the 23-year-old is adjusting to her new life, while others decide when or if she will ever be called Dr. Kamal. Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News, Richmond, Virginia.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. New Malaysian Prime Minister and opposition leader to sign cooperation deal. Vietnam speeds up Hanoi vaccine drive with 1 million jabs over the weekend. Shanghai suspends schools and flights as typhoon approaches China. As Japan seeks new leader, analysts say China policy unlikely to change. Why China would give more aid and investment to leery Philippines. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues on this Tuesday. Afghanistan's new Taliban rulers face tough economic and security challenges as they step back into power in a country that is vastly different from the one they left 20 years ago. When they last ruled in the late 1990s, Afghanistan was a poor agricultural nation, and the Taliban were preoccupied with imposing their harsh brand of Islam on an already deeply traditional and largely compliant population. This time, they're inheriting a more developed society with a small, educated middle class, but also an economy that has been devastated by war and corruption. Even before the Taliban overran Kabul on August 15th, the jobless rate was more than 30% and more than half of Afghans lived in poverty, despite two decades of U.S. involvement and billions of dollars in aid. Many displaced Afghans are still living in internally displaced people camps in different parts of Kabul. The Taliban government faces enormous economic challenges with near daily warnings of an impending economic meltdown and a humanitarian crisis. The United Nations warns it could drive 97% of Afghans below the poverty level by the end of the year. A new government must deliver quickly and ease the economic crisis, said Michael Kugelman, an analyst at the Wilson Center, a U.S.-based think tank. But how far the Taliban are willing to bend to ease international concerns while staying true to their own set of beliefs could further widen divisions among its leadership, particularly those with a more rigid ideology. Meanwhile, the Taliban announced an official policy on women's education rights. The move follows recent street protests across parts of the country where women gathered and held signs in defense of rights that were stripped away the last time the Taliban took power. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
The Taliban said Sunday that women can continue their higher education in gender-segregated classrooms and so long as they wear a hijab.
The first solution is that there must be places where boys can be separated from girls. Or the second solution, there should be specified times for boys and specified times for girls. The third solution is there must be a partition in class.
Haqqani says the Taliban dubbed Islamic Emirate will not oppose education that follows Islamic law. Advocates for women have voiced skepticism.
But every day we're receiving reports of rollbacks on women's rights. Women are prohibited from leaving the house without a mahram. In some provinces, they're stopped from going to work. Women protection centers that provide essential services for women who flee violence have been attacked.
Davidian added that safe houses are at full capacity. Last week in Afghanistan, women joined anti-Taliban protests in Kabul. The Interior Ministry of the Taliban government recently issued an order to end all protests in the country unless demonstrators first receive permission, including for slogans and banners. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, what North Korea's latest missile launch could mean for neighboring countries. Happening now in Asia, as the Chinese real estate corporation Evergrande sags under hundreds of billions of dollars of debt. Fears mount over an imminent collapse that could be felt across China's economy. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. North Korea has conducted its first missile test in about 6 months. The long-range cruise missile that was launched could give North Korea another way to evade its neighbor's missile defenses, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
North Korea says it tested newly developed long-range cruise missiles Saturday and Sunday. South Korea, which usually tracks and reports North Korean launches shortly after they occur, didn't comment until Monday. That raises questions about whether the U.S. and South Korea detected the missile test. At a briefing, a South Korean military spokesman said that Seoul is working closely with Washington to conduct an in-depth analysis of the launch. Cruise missiles fly at relatively low altitudes and can be guided in flight. That allows them to fly under or around missile defense radars. Analysts say the missile appeared visually similar to the U.S. Tomahawk, a nuclear-capable cruise missile with a range of about 1,600 kilometers. North Korea hinted its missile is nuclear-capable, though it's not clear the North yet has a nuclear warhead small enough to fit on it. Regardless, the missile is another lethal component in North Korea's arsenal, which has significantly expanded since 2019, when it resumed major weapons tests. United Nations Security Council resolutions ban North Korea from activity involving ballistic missiles, which potentially fly further than cruise missiles. By testing cruise missiles, which the resolutions do not ban, analysts say North Korea appears to be testing how far it can go without provoking a major U.S. response.
10월 10일 당 창건 일전으로 무력시 가능성 배제
Seoul-based analyst Yang Woo-jin says he expects North Korea to conduct additional demonstrations of military power in the coming weeks, but he says he doesn't expect any major provocations that would violate UN sanctions. North Korea is frustrated the U.S. did not relax sanctions during 2 years of talks in 2018 and 2019. With those talks stalled, North Korea seems set on expanding its weapons program. The North hasn't conducted an intercontinental ballistic missile or nuclear test since 2017. Many analysts suspect North Korea won't take any step that risks bringing further economic and diplomatic isolation. For the past year and a half, North Korea has imposed one of the world's strictest pandemic lockdowns, leaving its economy devastated. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
A lawyer for Aung San Suu Kyi, the leader of Myanmar's deposed civilian government, says his client missed her latest scheduled court appearance after she fell ill Monday. Her legal team said the 76-year-old Suu Kyi appeared ill and complained of being drowsy during a pre-hearing meeting in the capital. Min Min So later told reporters that Suu Kyi was suffering from car sickness, as she has not traveled by car over the last several weeks and was taken back home to rest. Monday's scheduled hearing was a resumption of her trial on charges of illegally possessing unlicensed walkie-talkies. She also faces separate charges of violating the country's natural disaster management law for breaking COVID-19 restrictions while campaigning during last year's parliamentary elections, breaching the Official Secrets Act, inciting public unrest, misusing land for her charitable foundation, and accepting illegal payments of $600,000 in cash plus 11 kilograms of gold.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia: the presidential candidate of Japan's Liberal Democratic Party, Fumio Kishida, has promised a new stimulus package to counter the effects of the coronavirus pandemic on the country's economy. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia's Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. President Joe Biden's COVID-19 vaccine mandate for workplaces across the United States is facing pushback from some Republican lawmakers who say they'll sue the administration. VOA's Michelle Quinn reports.
Critics say the Biden administration's COVID-19 vaccine mandate oversteps the federal government's role and will cause more resistance among the unvaccinated. The directive calls for some employers to make sure workers are either fully vaccinated or submit to weekly testing. Businesses that violate the policy could face fines of up to $14,000 per violation.
The problem is that I'm trying to overcome resistance, but the president's actions in a mandate hardens the resistance.
According to the Johns Hopkins University, the U.S. has nearly 41 million confirmed cases and nearly 660,000 deaths. About 74% of Americans 12 or older have received one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And the pace of vaccination has increased in recent weeks. But health officials are concerned that the coronavirus, which causes the COVID-19 disease, will continue to spread until more Americans are inoculated. So far, 19 Republican governors have said they will pursue legal action against the administration, arguing that the vaccine mandate is unconstitutional. The Biden administration says it is focusing on where the federal government has authority, such as many health facilities, which affects about 17 million workers, and workplaces with more than 100 workers, which will affect about 80 million Americans.
This is an appropriate action, we believe, and it certainly, from a public health perspective, most importantly, will help keep workers safe, and that will ultimately help our economy as well.
Separately, President Biden recently signed an executive order requiring the COVID-19 shot for people who work for the federal government as employees or contractors. The vaccine mandate for workplaces comes at a time when 62% of Americans say that economic conditions are poor, according to a recent CNN poll. Biden is gambling that the mandate will lead to more people becoming vaccinated as opposed to resisting vaccines, and that the economy will improve. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, Vietnam is speeding up its vaccination program as it attempts to loosen coronavirus lockdown restrictions in major cities, the government said Monday. Health officials say 5.5 million vaccine doses have been administered since March. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in India, where some children from poor urban communities do not attend school, voluntary groups have found creative ways to impart education. Anjana Pasricha looks at one such initiative in the Indian capital, where four buses serve as mobile classrooms.
How is rain formed, asks this teacher, giving a science lesson. Although the teacher, blackboard, and books all belong in a school, this is a classroom with a difference. It is held inside a bus that comes to a poor area in New Delhi to tutor children not attending school.
I have learned multiplication tables, ABCs, and Hindi language vowel signs.
I have learned drawing, Hindi, English, math, and other things.
These HOPE buses, run by non-profit Tejas Asia in 8 areas in Delhi, serve as a bridge to regular school. As the age groups are mixed, teaching in the mobile schools spans from basic language skills to science lessons.
We spend about 6 months to 2 years preparing every child and make them equal to the standards of the other children in the school so that when they get to the proper schools, they are also ready to continue on.
These children do not attend school for many reasons. Children of migrant laborers often drop out in the city. Others have to do housework and take care of siblings while their mothers work as housemaids. So teachers hold a class outside the bus for their young sisters and brothers. A meal after classes provides incentive to both children and parents. Persuading them to enter the bus initially is not easy.
So when we go to a community, it is a big challenge to create awareness, make them understand, the parents, the value of education, and because they don't really understand what this is all about, and also the trust factor. What are you going to do with our children? So it takes some time for us to build relationship in every community with every family. And after 3 to 6 months, they are comfortable. They understand, okay, we are here to invest into the lives of the children.
These mobile classrooms accustom the students to a school environment and discipline. More importantly, they help the students realize that with an education, they can chart a different course.
They can dream big, they can have a better future. They can also feel like, okay, this is not the ultimate end, like, you know, there is something much more big and better outside.
Those dreams vary. Mausumi's favorite is the art class.
I want to be an artist.
I will become a teacher.
Rafi Ali hopes one day to work in the city's gleaming glass and chrome buildings.
When I grow up, I will work for a proper job.
The path to these goals may still be hard and long, but this effort may help these students along that path. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
Finally on VOA Asia, one of the United States' most popular attractions for tourists, Broadway in New York City, will welcome back musical lovers and playgoers this fall as theaters citywide reopen at 100% capacity despite an ongoing threat of the spread of COVID-19. VOA's Tina Trin reports.
Over the past 18 months during the shutdown, the TKTS ticket booth in New York City's Times Square sat empty, but not for much longer.
It's good to be back in Times Square. It's good to know that the booth can open because it's such a central part of Times Square. So it's really exciting.
Broadway theaters officially reopened September 14th to full capacity crowds. For many, the return signals a city rebounding and the power of the arts to bring people together, even amid this uncertain end to the longest shutdown in Broadway's history.
What's really exciting to me is the idea that people are getting back to work, because this has been brutal for people who make their living in the live performing arts.
This is Broadway, and we can't wait to welcome you home.
The Broadway League, a trade association representing theater owners and producers, is hoping to entice audiences with this film, featuring clips from 99 Broadway shows. An accompanying website provides show information and outlines safety protocols. COVID still plays its part. Audience members will be required to show proof of vaccination and wear a mask.
Backstage, many things have happened, whether it's enhancing or changing air conditioning systems, putting in the new filters that they're recommending, creating new contactless services. The shows will each have a COVID safety manager.
Theater's mission of bringing people together is what excites Brian Moreland, a producer for Thoughts of a Colored Man, a play that will debut this season.
To have Broadway back in these streets, in these communities, to have our theaters alive with audiences from around the world, from neighbors in our backyards, back in these seats, it's going to be brilliant.
Everyone will be out celebrating.
Like many performers, Luke Napot spent most of the past year working from home, but managed to stay optimistic about Broadway when VOA spoke with him last spring. And now the reopening is happening. For Napot, doing an in-person rehearsal for Corner of Bitter and Sweet, an upcoming musical, is more than enough.
Getting to see people and getting to sing with an instrument, the feeling is amazing.
A great day, man.
We've been through a lot of trauma as a society, and we need healing. And I think that going to the theater is part of that healing process.
When the curtain soon rises, it's a feeling that will undoubtedly be felt by many. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, Doug Bernard, and Amy Hybels. I'm Chris Cascao in Washington. Enjoy the day, stay safe, and be well.